Welcome into the Naked Bootleg podcast presented by the Boston Herald. Evan Lazar and Adam Kirchen here, joined by a very special guest, the boss, the managing editor of Pat's Pulpit, Rich Hill. Rich, thanks for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right into it. And after all the crap that we have thrown the Patriots away the first six games or so of the season, the Chiefs lose last night on Thursday Night Football, and just like that, the Patriots are tied in the loss column atop the AFC in the driver's seat, it seems, here in control of their own destiny once again. What do you guys think about their chances of getting the one seed here?
I feel pretty confident about it, actually. I was talking to the writer for the Atlanta Falcons over at SB Nation, and they had that question right now, seeing how the Chiefs lost. They're down to two losses at this point. And out of the teams, the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Steelers, Patriots, Bills, and Dolphins, those are all the teams with the two losses. I feel best saying that the Patriots are going to finish the regular season with the best record, because it's really just the Chiefs and the Steelers, in my opinion. And I just think that the Patriots are going to pull ahead over the second half of the year.
I think there's a good chance it's the Patriots too. If you had asked me about a month ago, or even a couple weeks ago, the Chiefs looked so much more impressive, and I thought they were gonna definitely lose that Denver game out there. But those teams haven't really, they've obviously stumbled a little bit lately, and there's just like you look around the league in general, there's no perfect team right now. There's no team that doesn't have at least one real big flaw. So I would say the Patriots stand as good a chance of anyone as coming out with the number one seed in the AFC. So long as they, correct some of these flaws on defense, I think their offense is going to be fine. And just in terms of like making stops and getting towards the middle of the pack on defense, it's just going to go a long way towards doing that.
Yeah, I agreed. I think that it's pretty incredible that given how much flack they have gotten in the Boston area, the Patriots, that is, that here we are sitting 6 weeks in and they're 4-2, pretty decent record with all things considered, and have a basically a clear path to the number one seed here. And I think that really what you said, Adam, is really true, is that there is no perfect team. Like, we thought the Chiefs were a perfect team. But over the last 2 weeks, we've kind of seen them stutter a little bit. There is no perfect team in the entire NFL right now, which is unbelievable. Usually there's one or two dominant teams that push the 72 Dolphins even sometimes into thinking that maybe there's another perfect season coming down the line. Not this year. Everybody has two losses outside the Eagles already, and we're only 6 weeks in, 7 weeks in. So, I think that this year more than ever, the Patriots have time to kind of let this thing ride out a little bit and figure things out defensively, get the offense back to where it was the first month of the season. And, Patriots fans don't really need to panic, really, for the much of this season, and kind of just let this team coast a little bit here and figure things out and just keep adding up the wins. And then eventually, it looks like that the number one seed in the AFC is going to be able to have, four or five losses here.
Yeah, and you're looking at the Chiefs right now. They've allowed 28 points per game over the past 3 weeks. And we're seeing a little bit of a rocks, paper, scissors action going on with those three teams, where the Patriots have the ability to pick apart the Steelers, no problem whatsoever. But the Steelers' zone defense is perfect for stopping that Chiefs offense. But the Chiefs' dink and dunk offense, plus a little bit of those explosive plays, is the perfect counter for the Patriots, who just really wait for the opposing offense to make a mistake that just won't come. So you kind of have those three teams just pushing towards the top, rising. And, the Houston Texans are a little bit of a wild card, but you can't really rely too heavily on rookie Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, this is just going to come down to these three teams at the end of the day, whichever team has the best Sunday. Hopefully, if the Patriots can get a bye week, then they can avoid facing one of those teams, and crossing their fingers, it'll be Patriots Steelers again, and that should be in the favor of New England.
Yeah, I think that one of the things you touched on there is key, because The Patriots play all three of those teams. All right. They've already played Kansas City, and they'll play Oakland and Denver. But then, you know, those teams are all, you know, in the mix, but they all play each other twice, you know. So there's going to be an element of those teams beating each other up and having, you know, one of those teams who you would think potentially could really challenge for that one seed get knocked off simply because they're in that division, which is pretty tough this year. Not to say that the AFC East isn't improved, but it's not on the level of what you get at the AFC West.
Yeah, it's probably the best division in football right now, the AFC West, from top to bottom. Even teams like the Chargers and the Raiders who have struggled, they're obviously super talented on both sides of the ball and have big-name players. And you see guys like Amari Cooper last night who just, you know, struggled the entire season and then breaks out for 200 yards and 2 touchdowns because, you know, that guy is super talented. So that's a really good division, and you're right, they will definitely beat up on each other. But before we get into the Super Bowl rematch here with the Falcons, we wanted to touch on a trend that really started right away with this Patriots team in week one. And 2 weeks in a row now, the offense has had chances to close out the game in the fourth quarter. Talking about the fourth quarter struggles here defensively, it's been a grind in the fourth quarter all year as well. Obviously, that Chiefs game right off the bat, giving up 21 points in the final frame. Rich, it's weird to see a Bill Belichick coach team struggle late in games like this.
Yeah, I think it all roots in their inability to be consistent in the red zone. You know, you see how they got to the 9-yard line, had to kick a field goal late against the Jets. That's something that's been a problem this entire year. We looked at this at Pat's Pulpit a little bit earlier, so we don't really have the Jets game factored into it, but they've been kicking inside the 10-yard line far more frequently than they have in the past. And that just shows that they've been struggling to finish their drives. And maybe it's the loss of Julian Edelman. He didn't really rack up too many touchdowns, but he at least brought the team down to the goal line for LeGarrette Blount to finish. It just seems like this Patriots offense isn't getting to the goal line as much as it has in the past, and it hasn't been able to score as much, hasn't been able to reach the red zone, or reach the end zone, I mean. And you want to see Rob Gronkowski a little bit more involved. I want to see Brandon Cooks more involved. I think he's been very underutilized inside that red zone. And if they can get him back involved, you know, he hasn't even been started, maybe even Dwayne Allen, then hopefully they'll be able to produce a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you there, especially with the Gronkowski part. Until that Jets game, I think he only had one red zone touchdown all year, which is kind of strange given, you know, the nature of their current personnel. You would think he would be the guy they go to every time, but yeah, and it was funny how easy it looked when they scored against the Jets with Gronkowski in the red zone. Just that little out pattern with Jamal Adams covering, there was just no chance. And that's pretty much kind of what you think you can do almost every time you get in that position. So you know, if they keep you know, hitting that one, then, you know, the red zone struggles will dip a little bit. I don't think there's guys that can really cover Gronkowski one-on-one in that situation. So, I mean, there's very few, if any. So I think that's a big part of it. I think third down is a down where, you know, they've had trouble in the fourth quarter for some reason. They just haven't been able to get teams off the field when they need to. And then, you know, as you saw in the Jets game, they couldn't convert a third down on offense to keep a drive alive and sort of put the game away. So it is very strange because usually, you know, a lot of times with these Pats games, you'll see they'll struggle a little bit in the first half, but then at the end of the second quarter, they'll score and sort of take over. And then when the fourth quarter comes along, they'll also finish strong there. So, like, their inability to sort of finish the second quarter and fourth quarter, you know, to the same degree that they have in the past is a little weird. But I don't think it's something that is just going to continue all season, just because it never really does. Those sort of situational aspects that we're talking about, like third down and red zone, those are aspects of the Patriots game that usually iron themselves out throughout the year, even if they're, you know, not quite there yet.
Right. You know, two weeks in a row now, like I said, they have stalled essentially on offense in the fourth quarter with really a chance to ice the game and put it out of reach for both the Bucs and the Jets. And I think that the red zone things that you guys touched on are really true. And it feels like almost, and maybe it's, this is just a theory, but it feels like, you know, once they get to about the 25 or 30 yard line, they are have a tendency to start throwing it already into the end zone like they're at the five. They did that last week right before the half when they missed the field goal with Koskowski, and Belichick kind of alluded to it, you know, not ideal to have a couple of incompletions on deep throws, low percentage throws there. In that situation, in the fourth quarter, you know, they were a little bit conservative when they called draw. You know, putting up the game up 10, I guess, is what they were going with there. They didn't, you know, kind of counted on the defense against Tampa, too, in that situation, kicked a field goal. And, you know, relied on the defense to not give up two touchdowns in the quarter. And, you know, you get that strategy, but you would also like to see them, you know, stomp on somebody's throw here and you know, just end the game on offense every once in a while. And I think that Brandon Cooks in the red zone, yeah, very true. I mean, no red zone targets, not a single one in 6 weeks. Gronkowski obviously has been a factor down there, but not as big of a factor as we necessarily are used to seeing. And then obviously, you know, this is kind of something that points to Dwayne Allen's, you know, struggles here. Martellus Bennett last year was a huge, huge factor in the red zone, especially obviously in those games where Gronk wasn't playing. But overall, even in general, he was a big red zone target, another tight end, another big body that teams had to be responsible for. And with Dwayne Allen's struggles, they really don't have another guy that can kind of beat a defense vertically. You know, they have guys like Cooks or Amendola or Hogan or the running backs that they're trying to throw underneath passes to and kind of throwing right into the teeth of the defense. The thing about Gronkowski is that you can throw it up to him and he'll go up and get it. Or he'll, you know, body a guy like he did with Jamal Adams and beat him to the corner. They don't really have another receiver like that besides Gronk because the rest of these guys are, you know, more of the fast, you know, smaller ilk, you know, and Martellus Bennett was a big secondary option there. Dwayne Allen, I think that's the guy that they hoped would be the secondary option this year, obviously, who hasn't been. But I think that's a big factor. Reason why Brandon Cooks hasn't gotten a ton of targets in the red zone as well. You know, he's not a guy that's going to go up and catch a jump ball. He's not a guy that you can throw over the defense and have him catch it in the back of the end zone or something like that. He's really a guy that you're going to have to create separation somehow for him to catch the ball in the red zone area.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why Chris Hogan has seen an expanded role, right? He's the only one that's, you know, 6'3", able to post up against a defender. He leads the team with four red zone touchdowns. And he's taken over a little bit of the role of Julian Edelman, but Hogan has been asked to step up as that big target. I just wish there was more creativity towards the goal line because you have so many quick receivers that are able to generate early separation that maybe, you know, maybe not a rub route, but those whip routes that the Patriots guys would use a little bit towards in the Super Bowl against the Falcons. Maybe we'll see that on Sunday. They should draw something up for Cooks to use his quickness because he's been seeing a lot of double teams, and I understand not throwing it to him in those situations, but manufacturing packages that will get him those single coverage should be more important because as of right now, what they've been doing, settling for, you know, 33% completion rate to Rob Gronkowski inside the red zone is not the success that they need to have. And so there should be a little bit of a change because they have to stop settling for these field goals. And another thing you touched on is the possible addition of Dwayne Allen because he hasn't seen a target since week four. Rob Gronkowski seems to think that Allen is close to turning a corner. Allen played, what, six snaps against the Jets? He's not being used as a receiver anymore because they use Jacob Hollister as that number two tight end if they want them to be a potential threat. He hasn't been used as a blocker anymore because they've brought on Adrian Waddle as an extra blocker. What role does Dwayne Allen have, and is it something that he can expand on moving forward?
Yeah, it's one of those deals where I think he dropped a few passes, and he's just I don't know when he's going to get back in a prominent role. It might just be one of those deals where he's just not what they hoped. So I mean, he's definitely at this point not what they hoped. I mean, it's a huge drop off right now from what they had last year in Bennett. I mean, I would have thought that at least if he wasn't catching passes and stuff, that he'd be used more right now in blocking packages, because he is. I still think he's a pretty good blocker, but yeah, his limitations have really affected the team, I think, because you know, when you're able to use those two tight end packages like they were able to do so effectively last year with Bennett, it opens up a lot of different things you can do with the playbook. So, I mean, you hope that he makes a little bit more of an impact, but I'm not confident on him totally turning things around until, you know, I see something on the field.
Right. I mean, obviously with the Patriots, it could be 1 week. Dwayne Allen plays six snaps on Sunday against the Falcons. He could play 70 and catch two touchdowns. You know, you don't know. But at the same time, it feels like maybe the player just wasn't the player they thought that they were acquiring, which is a real, you know, that out of all the things that you can kind of pick on about this Patriots past offseason, if Dwayne Allen ends up being a negative or a zero, and you lost him to, you know, letting Martellus Bennett walk for about the same money roughly, that's a really big loss that maybe is bigger than some of the other ones that we've talked about, you know, Jabal Sheard, Chris Long, giving Stephon Gilmore the contract that they did. It might actually be at the end of the day that getting absolutely nothing out of Dwayne Allen and, you know, losing all that production that Martellus Bennett gave you last year, who was basically a top 10 tight end in the NFL, both in receiving yards and touchdown catches last year. That's a lot of production to just walk out the door. Obviously, you know, Brandon Cooks can step up and fill that void a little bit. Hopefully some of the running backs too, maybe Rex Burkhead, when he gets back in the lineup. We've saw him against the Saints catch a touchdown basically in the red zone. So maybe that's where they go with it. But that was one that I don't think that any of us really saw being as big of a drop-off as it ended up being, Dwayne Allen from Martellus Bennett. I think we all thought that Dwayne Allen would at least, you know, hold his own as a blocking tight end and give them whatever they needed as a kind of a emergency outlet in the passing game. But right now he's just, you know, six snaps on offense last week against the Jets, and his snap count continues to go down every week. As long as Gronkowski is out there, the only week that he played a ton of snaps was week one. And then the week that Gronkowski missed. So, you know, it's a big difference, you know, between him and Bennett. But let's get right into this Falcons game now. The eighth time that we get a Super Bowl rematch the following regular season. Good news, the defending champs are 5-2 in those games. But let's start with the Falcons, who have lost two straight after winning their first three. And defensively, they've been all right. But offensively, at least statistically, this unit is very different than it was a year ago, averaging almost 10 points less per game than they were last year when they led the NFL in points per game. Rich, what are you seeing with this offense right now?
Part of it, in my opinion, is the transition from Kyle Shanahan to Steve Sarkisian. They just haven't been as creative with manufacturing players open in this offense. Taylor Gabriel has been a notable absence here. He only has 168 receiving yards. That's not where he needs to be. Mohamed Sanu, I know he missed a game. He's been hampered with an injury, but 163 receiving yards. They're all very much so underproducing, other than Julio Jones, and you can't win with just having one star receiver. We've seen that with the Texans offense over the years when they've just relied so much on Andre Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins. You just can't be a consistent contender with just one star receiver. And so, sure, they've had some success in the running game. There's no question about that. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman have been very, very productive. But the big difference has been Matt Ryan. He's no longer been that MVP caliber, setting all of these superstar records that, you know, he rightfully won the MVP because he carried that defense to the Super Bowl. This year, six touchdowns, six interceptions. His passer rating is, you know, 87. It's not stellar. It's actually just average. And so the fact that Sarkisian is not getting these players open as much has definitely affected this Falcons offense and the rhythm that they need to generate in order to make that West Coast offense successful.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it was watching that offense last year. There were so many weapons, like you said. It was the usage of everybody was so spread out. I think a guy like Gabriel last year was so so well used and so dangerous. Whereas this year, it feels like, you know, in addition to the fact that Ryan just doesn't really look himself or look anywhere close to what he was last year, it doesn't feel like they're using everybody as much as they could. Like even the running backs, they're playing well, but like they don't run the ball nearly as much as you would think, and you know they don't throw it to the backs as much as you know they're capable of being weapons on the outside. You know, like these backs are a mismatch in the passing game, and you know they don't have a ton of targets or receptions. And I feel like that was sort of true in the Super Bowl too. And like we've talked about this, Evan, like you know they were really good at getting open and you know making big plays in the Super Bowl, but they in the second half the Falcons sort of just stopped throwing to them for large portions of the those last two quarters. So to me it's a function of like, hey, like you've got so many guys here that can make plays, but you're not really using all of them to the extent that Shanahan did. And that might partly be Sarkisian sort of, you know, getting to know what he has personnel wise. I think this isn't a problem that's going to necessarily have stick with the Falcons the entire year. You know, maybe Sarkisian gets a better handle on things on, you know, who can do what and, you know, what works best with each guy. So that's definitely possible. I think the pieces are still there. You know, to think this offense is going to sort of underperform all season, I think is, would be a mistake. So, you know, this could be the game that, you know, the Falcons really go off because, you know, a lot of the offenses that the Patriots have faced so far have really, had some of their best games against the Pats. So, it's one of those deals where I think the Falcons have the pieces to turn things around on offense. They're just not quite there yet.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like the way to get right on offense this year has been to play the Patriots. It seems like, you know, Carolina, Houston are the best examples of that. All of a sudden, both those offenses struggling for most of the year. They come in, they play New England, and now they're juggernauts all of a sudden. So, right. You know, that's my fear. Obviously, I think it's everyone's fear going into this game is that this is the week that Matt Ryan and this offense starts clicking again like it was last year. And one thing that you guys both kind of alluded to that when I watch these guys on tape, it's pretty obvious is that they don't have the same rhythm that they had last year, the same continuity. Last year, when especially in the Super Bowl, I mean, this team was like it was like all 11 guys were connected to the same chain. You know, they would run bootleg play actions, all that Kyle Shanahan crap that he loves to do. And it was like all 11 guys were moving at the same time and for the same purpose. Right now, it feels a lot more isolated and a lot more separated for some of these guys than that. And it's not clicking the same way because of it. The Falcons offense last year, what made it so dynamic and one of the best offenses of all time statistically was really that they really worked well off of each other to make open receivers and create easy yards. And they did a really good job of both incorporating the run and the pass into that. And, you know, you saw, like, the big run that Devontae Freeman had right off the top of the Super Bowl. You know, that was a run where everybody is blocking and Freeman hits the hole correctly and then he just takes off and it's a 55-yard gain right off the bat. You know, that type of stuff was what you were seeing all of last year with this Falcons offense. A couple of the catches that Julio had were very much in that respect too, of, you know, kind of working off of each other and creating separation that way. I think that that is one of the biggest things that you've seen a drop off between Kyle Shanahan and Steve Sarkisian, is just the rhythm and the timing of this offense is not the same. The other thing that I would say is different is the play calling. From somewhat the schemes, the play designs are all the same. It's the same offense, but the play calling itself is different. It's not as aggressive. It's not as quick paced. It's not, there's not the same urgency. And then you wonder maybe a little bit if that is just to do with, you know, the hunger isn't quite there after making it all the way to the top and falling down like the way that they did. But overall, I think that a lot of that has to do with Kyle Shanahan. That the play calling, who's one of the best play callers in football, Shanahan is, to have that walk out the door is huge for this offense and really can't be understated. But then the third thing is really that this team has just regressed. Some of the players have just flat out regressed. Matt Ryan has regressed. He has not had a good year as he had last year. His accuracy is down. His decision-making is down, as Rich mentioned, with the 6 picks already. He's throwing behind the sticks more on third down. You know, that Football Outsider stat that keeps track of that, he led the league last year in throwing past the third down marker. On average, he threw down past the third down marker every single time last year. This year, way, way below that. And you saw that in the Dolphins game, especially Matt Ryan just checking the ball down on third down and you know, conceding essentially. And you didn't see that at all last year with this Falcons offense. They were attack, 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 attack. And right now they are been very, very passive, it feels like. And I don't think that all goes on Sarkisian, although I think a lot of it does. And Matt Ryan kind of deflected that this week when he was asked about it and said, Sark is doing a great job, and it's not him. The players and me and have to play better and whatnot, and which is all true. Matt Ryan's not having the season that he had last year, but I don't think you could have expected this offense and Ryan and Julio Jones and some of these other players to perform at that level year, you know, for an extended period of time. 1 year is one thing and still very impressive, but to do that for 2, 3, 4 seasons in a row was probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah, and part of the problem has been the fact that the receivers have been dropping footballs and they haven't been converting as well on the deep passes as they had last year. I think that he's had the biggest drop where he was one of the most accurate, as you said, on the deep ball in 2016. Now he's towards the bottom of the league. Part of that has been the drops. Part of it's been the accuracy. Part of it's been drawing up plays that put players in the position to succeed. With the Patriots defense, they've been allowing a lot more big plays this year than they have ever before, and it's looking like they won't have Stephon Gilmore or Eric Rowe against these Falcons receivers. Both of them were not at practice again on Friday. What do you think is going to happen with the Patriots secondary right now? Who's going to match up on whom? How is it going to play out? Are the Patriots in a lot of trouble, and will this be the fix, as you said, that the Falcons need for their offense?
Yeah, I think that's a big factor, you know, with Rowe. If you see Rowe and Gilmore not out there, it's problematic for a lot of reasons, because there's not a I mean, you know, I'm not sure who would match up with who. I mean, you could see Butler with Gabriel, and since Bottomosi is a little bit taller, see him matched up with Julio Jones. But then there's part of you that thinks that, you know, you want your best corner size regardless, in Butler going up against their best receiver in Julio. But you know, I think in general, it's just a mismatch really at this point. If those guys are out, there's no really other way around it. You know, you can put this guy on that guy, this guy on the other. You just don't have the same caliber of talent out there as you would if you had Rowe and Gilmore. So I think you sort of, if that's the case, I'm thinking that, you know, the Falcons will probably have that type of, you know, sort of big game from them in this game, just from a matchup standpoint. I don't know how you can expect someone like Batamosi to stick with some of these receivers for four quarters and like shut them down. You know, I mean, yeah, I know the Falcons offense hasn't really lived up to what it's been, but you know, this, it's simply a mismatch with these guys right now. So I think, like we've said before, when some of these corners have been out, you need a guy like Patrick Chung to really step up as far as coverage on like a slot receiver. So maybe he's matched up with Gabriel Moore. But you know, the, I mean, luckily the Pats have some good, you know, three safety looks with Daron Harmon and Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung. But they're gonna have to really manufacture ways to cover these guys if those two guys are out. It's just simply a talent drop off when those guys are out.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to imagine that this defense can hold it together. From what we know of the Falcons offense, you know, from the Super Bowl and just from the last year or so. But then at the same time, you know, we've gone over how this isn't really the same unit. But one thing I wanted to circle back on real quick was just that you mentioned the drops, Rich. And one thing that's interesting about Matt Ryan's year right now is that he's having a really weird year when he's under pressure. Pro Football Focus says that he's down nearly 20 points on his passer rating, but his accuracy percentage is actually better than it was last year, and they've actually dropped 5 passes when he's throwing under pressure, and that has really killed them, which is pretty, you know, not on Ryan, obviously, but those drops have definitely been a factor as well. And I think as far as matchups go, Butler had Gabriel for a lot of that of the Super Bowl. I would assume that that's a matchup that they still like. And what they did against the Jets with the Batamosi a lot of the times is they had Butler on an island, mostly against Robbie Anderson, and then they had Batamosi on the other side in some sort of zone coverage, because it seemed like he felt a lot more comfortable playing zone than he did playing man. Pattern matching wasn't really his thing, but when he got, it was able to get in guys' faces and drop into just cover twos and cover threes, he seemed to be a little bit more comfortable. So maybe that's what you end up seeing, and you end up seeing him on Julio and not man coverage, but more in a zone look with a safety help over the top, or maybe just in straight cover three, and you kind of give up some of that underneath stuff to Julio and make tackles. I think that that's kind of the approach that they went against, the, you know, obviously a much different opponent, but that's basically what they did against the Jets. And I think on paper, that's probably their best bet. I mean, I understand putting your best corner and Butler on Julio, but maybe you'll see that situationally on third downs or red zone or something like that. But I just don't really know if it's a great matchup for Butler, size speed wise, to be up against Jones, especially, you know, without much help in terms of Gilmore or Rowe being on the other side as well. So I think that you could see Batamosi playing more of like a bracketing coverage with maybe Devin McCourty over the top of Julio Jones for most of the day, and then rely really with what they did against the Jets was rely pretty heavily on Malcolm Butler to get a guy on an island and shut him down for most of the game, which is what he did with Robbie Anderson, more or less. And maybe also I think we probably see a decent amount of cover two in this game with both, you know, Harmon and McCourty deep. And they really haven't done that a ton this year, it doesn't seem like, but I think that that it has a chance to be a really good coverage for them and against some of these teams that have a lot of receivers that can fly. And I think that's maybe the direction that they go in, because Batamosi does have that physicality, does have that size that you like, and he's a pretty good tackler too. So, you know, all those things kind of add up to being, you know, not a terrible, obviously, you know, still keeping it in perspective, but not a terrible matchup for Julio Jones, especially maybe, you know, kind of hoping that this Falcons offense is still kind of figuring things out.
Yeah, I actually have a sneaky prediction right now. I think that Jordan Richards is going to have a surprisingly large role just based off of this Falcons offensive makeup and how they utilize all of their different players and all of the current weaknesses with the Patriots, because Patrick Chung is often utilized to cover the tight ends. We know that. But the team also likes to use him in coverage of some of the running backs out of the backfield, especially when they don't feel fully confident in Kyle Van Noy or Dante Hightower to be up to those sorts of tasks. And with Freeman and Coleman being so good out of the backfield, we could see Chung moving up that way. We could also see, as a kind of a trickle-down effect, Evan McCourty getting the draw against Austin Hooper. But mostly, I think Jordan Richards will have a big role because the Patriots will kind of want them to, you know, to run the ball. You know, you with all of these injuries in that secondary, you don't want to match up one-on-one because you're going to lose. You're going to have to dedicate some additional resources to help defend the pass. And we've seen this time and time again with Belichick when he was playing 2013 Peyton Manning or, you know, all of these other great offenses that we've seen, is that if the Patriots don't feel confident entirely in their secondary, they're going to go light. They're going to go add, you know, a lightweight player in the middle of the field and say, you know, we want you to run the ball. We want to take the ball out of the air and keep it on the ground because we'd much rather give up 4 or 5 yards at a time and try and force a missed pass attempt than we will to, you know, try and defend Julio Jones with Johnson Badamosi all game, because that's just not going to end well. And so Jordan Richards has seen an increased role this year as kind of that hybrid linebacker safety sort of thing. He hasn't really played too great, in my opinion, but I think that he will have a bigger role this week.
I actually thought against the Jets he played a lot better than he did against the Chiefs, and I think that that's a really good point, is that some Chiefs are just a bad matchup for it. But on paper, I actually see what they're trying to achieve with Jordan Richards in the game. He's not a guy that obviously is going to be a big run stopper, although he did better against the run, I thought, against the Jets, yep, especially. But really, what you see what they're trying to do, right? You know, they have nobody at the linebacker position that can really cover. Jordan Richards obviously isn't an exceptional cover guy, but he's at least better than an Elandon Roberts is, and it allows Dante Hightower to rush the passer. So I think you get it. I think you can see where they're going with it. They just need Jordan Richards to play a little bit better. And again, some of these teams that aren't Kansas City, that don't necessarily have the dominant run games and dominant run blocking offensive lines like the Chiefs do, or a Steelers team or something like that, you definitely can see how this Jordan Richards package could be a factor and could work. It worked pretty well, I thought, against the Jets, actually, because the Jets were just not running the football well. They haven't run the football well all year. And they really couldn't move the Patriots front four anyways. So having Jordan Richards out there wasn't as much of a liability as it was against, let's say, Kansas City, when Kansas City could just, you know, use that offensive line to run all over the Patriots. I think the Falcons, it's a slippery slope, because Devontae Freeman is one of my favorite running backs in the entire league to watch. I think he's one of the best in the league. So you don't want to, like, you know, dare him too much to beat you, because he's one of those guys that will run for 200 yards if you let him. But maybe you're right. Maybe that's the way that they go with it, and they kind of go with that 2013 Denver Broncos game plan where they put, you know, a dime defense out there and they beg Matt Ryan to run the football. And maybe Freeman has a huge day, but maybe it keeps them in the 20s and it keeps this game close.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good idea, Rich, because the Falcons, for as good as the backs have been, have not run the ball as much as most teams in the league. They're actually, in terms of rushing attempts, you know, so for as good as those backs are, they, you know, they might, you know, even if you dare them to run the ball, not, you know, take what's there. And the thing with Richards is, you know, this is a game where the defense will have to get creative to sort of, you know, have their best shot, just because of the guys that are out. They'll have to find ways to sort of just get creative. And with a guy like Jordan, he's been on the team for long enough. He knows the defense well enough that they can do a lot of different things, and he won't be running around there not knowing what he's doing. So if you put Richards out there, you can do a lot more things defensively, and you can sort of see if you can bait them into running the ball. I think that's actually a really decent idea, because I think that would, you know, they did the Patriots this game. I think one of the big things is they want to cut out these big plays that they've been giving up. They want to keep guys in front of them. And if they can have the Falcons sort of go downfield and sort of slower drives and, you know, longer, you know, drives where they don't have these huge chunk plays, that's what they'd prefer to happen, and sort of make the Falcons, you know, try to, you know, take advantage of the fact that the Falcons have turned the ball over, or that Ryan has thrown six picks already this year, compared to last year, which was, you know, nothing. So, I think if they want to make the Falcons, you know, be, you know, a team that doesn't rip off these chunk plays that have really hurt the Patriots, that's what they're going to try to do. And I think putting Richards in there would be one way of, you know, forcing them to do that.
Right. And coming off their best run defensive game of the season against the Jets, even though the Jets aren't a great running team, even Bill Belichick himself said that he thought that this was the best the run defense has looked all year against the Jets. And, you know, they can have that. That front four did a really nice job, especially the two interior defensive linemen, Lawrence Guy, Alan Branch, and Malcolm Brown, whoever was in the game, did a really nice job of clogging up the middle and enforcing some of those runs to go for a no gain, negative yards. So I think that's definitely something that they could lean on in this game, is their run defense and allow the pass defense to kind of have some extra bodies back there. But let's before we sign off, let's move over to the defensive side of the ball, or the offensive side of the ball for the Pats quickly, and just look at a few things here. You know, this Falcons defense hasn't really turned the corner that we thought maybe that they would with all the young talent that they have. But at the same time, you can like circle a few guys for sure, four or five guys on this defense that are really, really good football players. Deion Jones, the linebacker, obviously stands out against Gronkowski, especially, is going to be one of the matchups of the game, I would think. Deion Jones, when I watch him on tape, looks like a safety in coverage. He's unbelievable in coverage as a linebacker. Grady Jarrett, obviously, old friend Grady Jarrett's going to be back, yeah. And he's going to wreak some havoc on the Patriots' interior line. That's a really an interesting matchup to look at, just to see if this interior line has taken a step and can stop Grady Jarrett this time around. And then obviously Desmond Trufant is back in the mix. He didn't play in the Super Bowl. He's out with a season-ending injury. Desmond Trufant back this year and playing like a Pro Bowler, hasn't missed a beat. So it hasn't come together in terms of you know, statistic output, but overall this defense has some talent on it.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm very impressed with all the talent that they have at every level. You know, on their defensive line, they have a couple good pass rushers. Brooks Reed, I know that he doesn't have a household name, but he has three sacks on the year. He's not a superstar, but he's one of those average rotational pieces that every team needs, and he seemed to step up. And he's playing, you know, Vic Beasley is going to be a rising superstar. They have so much speed at linebacker with Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones, and their secondary. I think this is one of the best secondaries in the league, or at least they have the most upside. And so if we're looking at the top secondaries over the next 5 years, this Falcons team would be, you know, my top three choices. They just have so much talent there. My thought with the Patriots offense is that they do a good job when the opposing team isn't able to generate too much pressure. And sure, they have Grady Jarrett, and Vic Beasley seems to be the perfect type of pass rusher that gives Nate Solder fits. But looking at how the Falcons have generated pressure this year, it's been very, very inconsistent. Sure, they've racked up a few sacks here and there, but they haven't been able to generate that type of consistent pressure that is really needed to throw the Patriots offense off their mark. It's very possible for the Patriots receivers and for the running backs, I think, to pick up where they left off in the Super Bowl. And I know part of that was due to the exhaustion of the Falcons defense, but moving laterally is something that this Patriots team has really shown a solid ability of doing. And I think that the Patriots have a real chance to move the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things both of you guys touched on is how the Patriots offensive line needs to respond in this game. The Falcons, like you said, Rich, their pass rush hasn't been quite as good as you'd think they would be coming into the year. But it's still, I mean, still the pieces are there, like you said. Like, they have good defensive linemen, good pass rushers. I mean, Jarrett hasn't recorded a sack yet this year, but he's still been disruptive, and he can still have the type of game he had in the Super Bowl. He's just a really talented guy. It's not like he's lost any steps or anything. He's every bit as good as he was a few months ago. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's the one. That's the main area I'm looking at this game. I mean, everything is something you need to watch. But I mean, the Falcons' ability with their front four to get pressure on this offensive line is something that's going to be very key. Just because, well, I mean, look, you know, the offensive line played well against the Jets, but the Jets don't really pressure anybody this year. And, you know, you want to see improvement out of that unit because, you know, for a lot of reasons, but not the least of which that, you know, Brady's been hurt this year. And you don't want to test his toughness any further. So this will be good. You know, if you see the Patriots really give Brady another clean game sacks-wise this game, then you can sort of – start to have more realistic optimism towards that unit. And I think, you know, if, you know, the Falcons again sort of go off and wreck the offensive line and get to Brady again, then it's sort of another step back, and you sort of say, well, the offensive line's, you know, performance against the Jets was sort of a, you know, aberration. So I think, you know, when I look at this offense on Sunday, I'm really just going to be watching mostly how well the offensive line can handle guys like Jarrett and keep them off Brady.
Right. Yeah, I think the offensive line is a big game in pass protection and in the run game as well. This Falcons defense is the 29th ranked defense in DVOA and run defense, according to Football Outsiders. Not a good run defense right now. Jay Ajayi ran for 130 yards against them last week, had a couple big runs thrown in there. So I think that this is an opportunity right now. We saw this against the Jets and against the Bucks. This running game of the Patriots is starting to get going here a little bit. And the Patriots' offensive line, as much as they've struggled in pass protection, has been excellent in the run game throughout most of the season. So I think that this is an opportunity here to kind of lean on this run game a little bit heavier and see what you really have there, because they do have a bunch of pass rushers over there in Atlanta, like Tack McKinley, Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, Adrian Claiborne. Dontari Poe still has some capabilities as a pass rusher. A lot of guys like that that can get after Brady. Maybe they run the ball a little bit more and we see what they have there. And also, you know, this is kind of why they brought Brandon Cooks in. This is kind of why they traded a first-round pick for Brandon Cooks, because they looked at the Super Bowl last year and they saw the lack of separation that they were getting from their receivers in the first, you know, three quarters of that game, practically. They knew they needed more speed at that position, and they went out and they got Brandon Cooks, and here's the game that they can kind of see if that was, you know, not necessarily saying that one game is going to decide whether it was worth it or not, but this is the game that they kind of, you know, built that kind of theory on, that they needed more speed, was this Super Bowl. So now that they have Brandon Cooks in the mix, let's see, you know, against this Falcons defense that's just fast at all three levels, how much that is a factor as well. But I really think that the way to necessarily beat this Falcons D is might be to just run the ball right down their throats like Miami did for much of that game. This run defense is not as good. They have a lot of really fast guys, but they do not have a lot of really big guys on this defense. Their linebackers are small. Deion Jones, as good as he is, both against the run and the pass, he's a smaller guy, and some of the other guys as well. So Vic Beasley is not really my cup of tea. He's not really a guy that pressures the quarterback consistently. He's more of just like a sack guy that, you know, has gaudy sack totals. But when you look at it, it's down to down play. It's up and down. So I think that you know, we saw that in the Super Bowl kind of, that he was really quiet in that game. I think that it's really a nice little test here for the Patriots offensive line in general. Was it the Jets being the Jets, not having a great season with their front four getting pressure or against the run really? Or is this something that we're going to start to build on here with the offensive line that, you know, obviously I don't think it's ever going to be a great pass protection line, but it has the opportunity to really be a good run blocking offensive line.
Yeah, and I tend to lean towards what Bill Belichick was saying during this past week in review of that Jets game, where he was very impressed by how the Patriots were able to run out of their base sets. And that was with James Devlin on the field alongside Rob Gronkowski with only two wide receivers. And Belichick said that the Patriots had more success running with just two receivers on the field this year than they've had in recent years against the Jets. And I think that points to some confidence that he has in the run game that might not have necessarily been made apparent in the statistical production of Mike Gillisley, but the confidence and support of the coaching staff is there. And they keep saying how close Gillisley is to breaking out. We keep seeing Deion Lewis being a contributor. This could be, as you said, the breakout game for the Patriots run blocking. And additionally, what Belichick was saying is that the Patriots' success on the ground kind of reduced the effect of the Jets' pass rush, whatever minor ability they had there, and it opened up the passing game for Tom Brady and the offense. So if Gillisley is able to get going against this Falcons defense, which, you know, DVOA points towards that possibility, then that could eventually open up some things for Tom Brady down the field if he doesn't have to deal with as severe of a pass rush. And that's where Brandon Cooks and Gronkowski and all of those matchups will really come into play.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's exactly what is what's key here when you're talking about the running game is, you know, like it seems like it's been turning a corner a little bit these last few weeks, and it really sort of came together against the Jets very well. And when you're able, like you said, to have an effective running game, that makes your play action game so much more effective. And if you can go play action and allow Cooks to go, you know, deep down the field, it's so much it's so much more effective than just sort of waiting Cooks to get back there and having teams tee off. Which they won't be able to do if they feel like you're going to have an effective running game. So, I think that's a huge key is, you know, I do think the Patriots will be able to run on this Falcons defense, like Evan said, because, you know, they're fast, but they're not necessarily this big team that can just, you know, push you backwards on every running play. So, you know, I agree. I think this the running game is going to have, you know, a big impact on this game. And the more the Patriots develop that throughout the course of the season, just the better the offense is going to be as a whole, you know, because it really can directly open things up for Cooks. The longer your dropbacks are with teams knowing that you're going to throw just makes things way more difficult for Brady. So, you know, to be able to sort of slow the pass rush down and make them think twice about pinning their ears back is going to really help.
Yeah, I wrote about this today, and, you know, I really think that this offense has a chance to become an offense that really features the running game. The offensive line, believe it or not, but according to Football Outsiders, Pro Football Focus, some of these analytics gurus, is one of the best run blocking offensive lines in all the NFL and has been for much of the season. According to Football Outsiders, they're literally the number one rated run blocking offensive line in all of football. That also factors in Rob Gronkowski's role, James Devlin's role, you know, the whole team as a run blocking unit. So that's one of those things that points to, you know, this becoming a real focal point of this offense. And I think that what we're seeing is that a lot of the passes that they're throwing are much further downfield than we're accustomed to seeing. And that short passing game that we used to see as kind of an extension of the run game is no longer there as much. So I wonder if the running game becomes where they really focus on extending drives consistently for all four quarters, running for first downs, for manageable second and third down situations. And then they can really incorporate the play action passing game, the deep passing game, Gronkowski, you know, in the middle of the field, Cooks deep, stuff like that off of this running game that can kind of be the cog that moves the offense consistently down the field. I think that that's one thing that we haven't seen this year, and the reason why in the last 2 weeks the offense hasn't scored as much points is because we don't have a consistent first down, you know, drive extender, drive, you know, a 10-play drive where they can throw the ball down the field 8 of the 10 plays. That's not going to happen this year because of the personnel that they have. The running game, I think, really needs to step up and be that short passing game almost. And I think that has happened in recent weeks and might continue to happen. But if they can really rely heavily on that, it's just going to open up the passing game that much more. The play action game, which we already know Brady is really comfortable in and really good at doing. And they seem to have the receivers to be a perfect play action passing team with Cooks and the speed that they have on the outside. And then Gronkowski, it seems like it would be an absolutely lethal play action passing team. It hasn't been quite that yet. But I think that it has a chance to really be that if this run game can get going. And I think that that is something that they are going to have to lean on heavier now that they don't have Julian Edelman in the mix. They don't have a guy that's a possession receiver that's going to catch 100 balls in the slot and move the sticks consistently. So I think that that's going to have to be the run game this year. And I don't think that that's necessarily a problem. I think it's just a little bit different. Maybe they become a team that runs for first downs and throws for touchdowns, you know, and that's a simple way of putting it, obviously. But I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing if that's the direction this ends up going. Rich, what do you have coming up here down the docket? Anything you want to tease on here?
No, just check out all of our content at patspulpit.com. We have our pregame show before the game, roughly an hour before, so it changes every single week. We have our podcast that comes out on Tuesday, myself and Alex Shane, the Pats Pulpit podcast, as we are creatively known as. And follow us on Twitter at Pats Pulpit or myself at PP_Rich_Hill.
Cool. Adam?
Yeah, I'm just putting together a feature on Johnson Batamosi for Sunday, and then actually, unfortunately, on Sunday night, we're sort of shorthanded on the desk, so I have to be doing some copy editing. I won't be at Gillette, but I'll obviously watch the game and you know, rewatch it afterwards. So, yeah, it'll be you know, I'm looking forward to the game, even though I won't be you know, able to cover it, but just look out for that Batamosi feature on Sunday.
Cool. Yeah, so I think it might have actually just come out as we're speaking now, but I have film review up now of the Patriots running game, what we just talked about, basically looking at some of the good things that they did against the Jets, the offensive line. James Devlin had a great game. Gronkowski obviously has been a big factor. And then also just some of the yards created by the running backs themselves. So check that out. And Adam and I will be back next week. I think we have a special guest again next week. I got Pat's Cap going to come in here and talk about the trade deadline with us, Adam, and throw out some trade ideas and the trade machine that is Miguel Benzon, and see if he thinks that any of that is actually possible. He's real good at not only, you know, maneuvering the cap to see if it will work, but also kind of just having a feel around the league of, you know, if it's even feasible or even a possibility from the other team's perspective. So we'll have Pat's Cap on next week. And Rich, thanks so much for coming on, man, and talking for us for almost an hour. I told you that we like to ramble about this type of stuff. I did warn you. So
nah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We'll have you on again soon. And for Adam Kirchin, Rich Hill, I'm Evan Lazar. We'll be back next week.